You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Vancouver City Hall struck an affordable housing task force over this past year. In late September, the task force released its final report. Critics argue that the report outlines an agenda that would benefit developers at the expense of low-income and renting Vancouver residents. Nathan Crompton is on the editorial collective of the online magazine The Mainlander, where he's written a critique of the final report of that task force, and he's joined me here in the studio. He's also an organizer with the Vancouver Renters Union. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. Let's look at the Affordable Housing Task Force. Who was on that task force?
Okay, so the task force was a 14-member task force. It had a large majority of the people on the task force were either developers or associated in one way or another with the development industry. So you had people like Olga Illich, who's one of BC's wealthiest right-wing developers. She was the co-chair of the task force. And then all the way down to someone like Nathan Edelson, who's more of a planner, but who in recent years has definitely sided with the development agenda, especially for Chinatown, and more recent upscaling gentrification type initiatives coming from City Hall. So it's a mix of development sympathizers and developers. There's no renters. There's no one representing the interests of low-income people or renters or anyone that's the most deeply affected by the housing crisis.
So we have these people, highly selected and narrow strip of interests. Who are the residents that are supposed to benefit from the reforms initiated by these developers and developer associates?
If you're both a developer and a resident of Vancouver, then you then you benefit most. But no, I think so. They set a target of who they were going to try to make affordable home ownership for, with some incentivized rental, and the range that they made was $21,000 to $84,000 a year as a person's annual income. So right away, that cuts out all the people who are on social assistance, making minimum wage, and so on, and low-income people, the people worst affected by the housing crisis. Then, on top of that, city councilors are already trying to raise the bar even above that. So you had Jeff Meggs, one of the city councilors here in Co-op, talking, I think, to Jane Bowie maybe last week, where he again raised the bar and said, oh, actually our range is $25,000 up to $80,000. So he raised another $5,000. And in that interview, he stated, we'll do our best to make it down to the bottom, and we'll be happiest if we make it down to the bottom of that range. So really they're planning on building medium-ranged housing, which the market is already addressing, or at least is addressing a lot better than low-income, affordable rental, and so on.
The Canadian Housing and Mortgage Corporation defines affordable as no greater than 30% of your income. So what kind of percentage, just roughly, do you think would be excluded from this proposal, which the city committee has come up with?
They've jettisoned any use of that definition, the 30% of a person's income, the universal definition used by the federal government and the UN and beyond. So they haven't given a percentage, but just to give you some figures, 15% of renters are paying more than 50% of their income on housing. Huge number of those people are paying up to 75% of their income on housing. Especially first-generation immigrants, people like that, are paying a huge amount of money. They're being rent gouged. They're being, exploited by landlords. And more generally, the housing market is making it virtually impossible for people to take minimum wage jobs in Vancouver. So what you have in Vancouver is this constantly circulating propertyless class coming in and leaving. And everyone says, oh, Vancouver is a city of migrants. That has to be truly understood as a city where people come, they do the low-wage work, and then they leave and appear in a pyramid structure that puts developers and property owners on top and everyone else on the bottom.
There's also a recommendation in the Affordable Housing Task Force report, which deals with one of the city bylaws called the city's inclusionary zoning bylaw. Tell me what that bylaw is and what the change was proposed by the task force.
Okay, so this is a really important part of the task force recommendation. It essentially says that for areas that have inclusionary zoning, so in Vancouver that means downtown Eastside Oppenheimer District, that means mega projects, which are supposed to have a minimum 20% non-market housing. For projects like that and for projects in the DEOD, the task force says if the developer can't scrape enough money together to build that non-market housing, they shouldn't worry about it. They should be allowed to be exempted from those basic regulations, and they should be allowed to go ahead with their project. I called my article the privatization and deregulation of housing, and this is the deregulation part, getting rid of inclusionary zoning. One thing that I have to note is city council has already been giving exemptions for inclusionary zoning. They've already made it so that new projects in the Oppenheimer district, for example, even though they have 20% non-market housing, up to half of that has been allowed to be market housing. So in the Pantages project in Maine and Hastings, social housing, quote-unquote social housing from the policy documents, is going to be renting at $900 a month. Ditto for the project at 955 on East Hastings. Social housing is still going to be going for market rents. So they've already been watering down the inclusionary zoning laws and so on. Now they're just putting it into code and giving it some legitimacy.
It just doesn't exist anymore. What about this deregulation? They recommended something with regard to, sounds positive, creation of a housing authority. What's your critique of the way they've done that?
Okay, so I think that one of the things that people don't know is that Vancouver already has an effective, active housing authority. It's called the Public Housing Corporation. It runs and manages non-market nonprofit housing. So right away, you have to wonder what they're going for by creating a new body, which is called the Housing Authority. And if you read with a critical eye and a little bit of suspicion, you can see that what they're going for is a similar body that can build housing, but A, it's not going to be building that non-market low-income housing. It's going to be more in the mid-range. And the mayor has brought up the Whistler Housing Authority as an example. And every time he brings that up as an example, he cuts out the rental portion of the Whistler Housing Authority, and he cuts out the non-market portion and mentions it as a way to bring new people into the homeownership market. And then on the other hand, the critical reading shows us who they're hoping to put on the board of the housing authority. So the idea of a new housing authority is it can be less accountable. It's not going to be a committee of council. It's going to have some kind of arm's length power. And similar to the recent changes with the structure of the board of the BC Housing Board, you'll have big players and big developers on it. So, for example, Bob Rennie was appointed to the board of BC Housing not too long ago. So now Bob Rennie, who's already in a position to control the housing supply for the city because he's poised as the main coordinator and marketer for the housing monopoly, and he's able to take units off and put them on whenever he wants based on the market, now he has even more control over the overall supply of the housing market because he can sit on the board of BC Housing, say where and when housing gets built, and so on. And you can see that this is what they're going for with the new housing authority, which is going to be lined with experts. And the housing task force has showed us what they mean by experts. They mean developers and developer friends, and they don't mean the people who are experiencing it firsthand, who, my opinion, are the experts about affordability.
There's a conflict going on around Heather Place. I don't know what's happening there, but I'm wondering if you can explain that issue a little bit and the approach in the context of that conflict of the city's affordable housing task force. So sort of a live example of how they're going to intervene.
Mm-hmm. I think that recommendation three, so the report, if you read the final report of the task force, it has four recommendations. Recommendation three is the one that Heather Place tenants should look at, or all residents of Vancouver should check it out, because what it does is it basically lifts all the material that the city's been using for its Heather Place press releases and talking points, and brings them into the report. So it gives a minimally progressive language around, oh, we need to preserve existing affordable housing, and then goes straight into defending the idea of using public lands to leverage the private market, make money on public lands, and maybe give some benefits to the people living in social housing. It hasn't worked at Little Mountain, and it's not working at Heather Place. The replacement housing at Heather Place is going to be between 300 and 500 or 600 more expensive per month. Tenants aren't going to be able to afford the new project. A full two-thirds of the existing units are going to be replaced with this market housing, which is not going to be affordable. Luckily, one-third of the existing units are going to be replaced, but a full 50 units are going to be gone forever. And that's the Heather Place model. And the Housing Authority... the task force and the final recommendations bring in Heather Place as a kind of invisible model for recommendation three. So just to reiterate, the point is take public lands, sell them or a portion of them to the private market, make some money, maybe replace them one for one, the existing units one for one, with no specification on that, whether or not it'll be the same price as currently. So with Heather Place, no caps. And it's going to be unaffordable. So that's the model.
This report sounds a disaster.
I would call it a disaster.
What would you recommend that people do to oppose this agenda?
People need to organize. Recently, there was a victory for Little Mountain tenants. They fought on all fronts. They joined the renters' union. They joined up with... members of COPE, were able to pressure the city and pressure the province to reverse their position. BC Housing served the tenants with eviction notice at Little Mountain in July, and since then, tenants and supporters have escalated the fight and have just received victory 2 days ago. BC Housing withdrew its eviction notice. And I think that's testament to Ingrid and the tenants at Little Mountain who have been fighting for so long. And I think it's a model for tenants at places like Heather Place. So I think the answer is to put up a fight.
And it can be won.
Yeah. I think people should look at models like the Renters Union, which is an organization that meets weekly and organizes in different buildings and helps and encourages people in different buildings to form renter locals, basically on a trade union model. The idea being that tenants should and can negotiate with landlords about their rents and have control over their housing. And so if someone's living in a building and they want to start organizing, they should get in contact with us at the renters union.
And what would be the contact link for them?
The website is vanrentersunion.org.
Okay.
And
that'll be good.
That should be enough. So if you go there, there's a contact information.
Vanrentersunion.org. Thanks very much, Nathan.
Great. Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Nathan Crompton. He's on the editorial collective of the online magazine The Mainlander. He's also an organizer with what he's been talking about, the Van Renters Union. If you'd like more information, as we've said, on the Renters Union, go to their website, vanrentersunion.org. And if you'd like to read the online magazine The Mainlander, you can visit the website, themainlander.com.